Welcome to Mysterious Goings On, the podcast about creativity, writing, and mystery. Every week, we talk about all kinds of great fiction and meet the people who write it. We also feature explorations about creativity in all walks of life. Your host, Alex Greenwood, will join you right after this.
Hey there, listeners. Alex Greenwood here. You know, one thing I love about hosting Mysterious Goings On is I get to ask the questions I'd want answered if I wasn't the host. That's the questions I ask. But also, I don't just ask questions. I have a give and take. I have a conversation. And I have it on a pretty good authority that the guests really like that style. Don't believe me? Listen to John Gilstrap, New York Times bestselling author of Blue Fire, Crimson Phoenix, and lots more.
You know, I would tell you that I've been doing this for 26 years, so I don't know how many interviews I've done over time, but this is my favorite kind. I like having a discussion. Less experienced interviewers have their list of questions, and you answer their question. And if during the course of answering their question, you confess to the Kennedy assassination, they won't pursue that because they've got to get on to the next question. You know?
Question seven. Thank you, Mr. Oswald. Yes. Where do you get your ideas? That's your favorite question, isn't it?
That is.
There, what can I tell you? Right from the horse's mouth. We have a good time on Mysterious Goings On, and I hope you'll subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, if you want to learn more, go to mgopod.com. Thanks so much for listening, and of course, keep reading. In a world where the pen is mightier than the scalpel, Daphne Wright's journey from the front lines of healthcare to the intimate reflections of the written word reveals the transformative power of narrative. Join us today as we delve into the heart and mind of a storyteller who transcended the boundaries of, quote, real authorship to pen a debut novel that speaks to the soul of urban living, the intricacies of human connections, and the poignant dance with mortality. On Love and Death and Belonging is not just a book. It's Daphne's testament to the resilience of the human spirit in facing life's third period challenges. From the slow, monotonous days of a global pandemic to the profound desire to leave a mark on the bucket list of life, Daphne's narrative journey is a beacon for anyone who has ever wondered, why not me? Daphne Wright, welcome to Mysterious Goings On.
Alex, thank you for having me on Mysterious Goings On. This is so exciting.
Well, it's good to have you. You know, I love to meet authors when they're hot off their first book. And if you don't mind, let me fanboy a little bit and say your book is tremendous. And I used to work in healthcare quite a bit. And I know a little bit about the long-term care journey. And I understand just how profoundly sad it can be. And I understand that also, though, there are ways for wonder in that final third period of life. So I wanted to ask you, was the story what jumped at you first? And you're like, I just want to express this. Or was it, I want to write a book and this would be a great topic, if that doesn't sound too crass?
Well, it's been kind of a long journey, actually. I think, you know, we all have a dream, and mine has always been to write. But decades later, I think COVID, actually, yeah. You know, your time moves slow. And I've had this character, Bryce, in my head. My girlfriend and I, before social media, we were going to do something called the Email Chronicles, and my character was Bryce, and he is a gay gentleman. I am not gay, and I was born female, so I don't know why Bryce is in my head, but I kind of had different iterations of him in different forms, and finally I sat down and started writing. And it basically came about when I heard that boomers were starting to turn 65 and looking at what the plan was for the last third and what if they needed care.
And did you find, though, that the writing was more challenging, or did it flow better than you anticipated?
Oh, it was a challenge. I had this manuscript. When I finally decided to do something with this, you know, you think you're sending in the, hey, yo, this is the best thing ever written, and it's just going to blow people away, and it's going to be, you know, I don't know, one draft edit. Not so. I am a nurse, and we write in fragmented sentences. It's been a long time since punctuation and grammar were a thing, and also flow. Yeah, there's so much more to it than I imagined.
You know, typically the old question, you'll get this more and more as you do more interviews with your next book, especially, I'm sure. Are you a plotter or a pantser? You know, you had the character, but did you have a story completely fleshed out, or did the character, did Bryce tell you where to go as you wrote the story?
Bryce, Fiona, and Adelina, I've got three characters, they led the way.
So tell us about these characters. If you don't, can you give us a little, just a little, you know, without giving away endings, of course, but give us the little little teaser here. What's all about, what's going on in this book?
Well, I'll start with Bryce. He is a gentleman who is gay, and he is diagnosed with ALS, which is Lou Gehrig's disease.
Yeah.
Not a nice diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And he's realizing he's going to need care. And how is he going to get that care? And a lot of people end up looking at long-term care, even if they're younger, which he is. He's 55.
Mm.
And so he's, and he's by himself. His partner has passed away prior, and he understands what, because he was a caregiver for his partner, he understands what it means to care for somebody. My other character is Fiona, and she is a nurse, and life didn't quite go as planned for Fiona. She's still needs to work. She'd love to retire, but she's not able to, and she's her life isn't going quite as happily along as she would have liked. And my last character is Adelina. She's a person of color, and she is living with domestic abuse, and she works as a cleaner, so she's non-regulated, and just the perils that go with along with being marginalized in the workforce.
So did you have personal experiences and observations as a nurse that influenced all of these characters and the facets of the novel?
Yes, and I also want to add, it sounds really heavy, but there are a lot of laugh out loud moments, and you know, there's joy in the book as well, so please, people, don't think it's a doomsday. Yes, I've taken care of people with ALS as well as other terminal illnesses. And I wanted to explore, I mean, I reflect as a nurse, most nurses, I'm assuming we reflect on things that we've seen, but I wanted to get into it. What does it really mean to have a diagnosis that's terminal and devastating? What is it to look for that you might need care, and how are you going to get that? And this character actually, Bryce, does look at medical assistance in dying. And I wanted to explore that as well. I have worked with people that, for example, here in Canada, in my province, the healthcare workers were part of the public system. We have public healthcare here.
Right.
And then they contracted them out, and oh yay, you could reapply for your job at a lower wage with more work. So, and I say oh yay sarcastically.
Yes.
And I wanted to explore what that would be like, because it was devastating. You know, I'm a nurse. These were my fellow workers, and to see them treated so poorly. And then I am a nurse, and I just wanted to explore someone who's still trying to make a difference in their job, but it's a little harder for them.
ALS in particular, I lost my uncle to ALS about 5 years ago.
Sorry.
Thank you. Only in his... I think he was just barely into his 70s, or maybe mid 70s, but he was a vibrant, he'd started a business. He was a very respected gentleman. He literally worked with presidents of the United States, a very accomplished individual. And it just was so, and it doesn't matter what your accomplishments are, but just to see a vital human being felled by this. And I remember he got to the point where he couldn't speak anymore, and we would communicate by email. But there was one thing I noticed about my interactions with Sam, and I wanted to just share this with you real quick. He was never particularly, at least he was kind to me, but he was not very loving. He would tell me every email, I love you. And I wanted to know, Daphne, is that something, do you find that a lot of ALS patients, they know what's going to happen and they know it is not going to be fun at all. It's going to be a horrific way to go. As far as I understand, it's just, to me, it just sounds terrifying, just to be honest. But do you find that, is that a common thing where they resign themselves to it? Do they get past the stage of being pissed off that they're got this illness? Or can you tell me a little bit about that? I just maybe for my own edification, so I can understand it a little better.
Well, the people I've taken care of on a more intimate basis was when I worked as a home care nurse. So we go into the home and I had a few patients with ALS and it is devastating. And yet I don't want to take away anyone's hope right. that has a diagnosis of ALS, but I think everybody's different. I hope that when we get to that stage, no matter what we are, the cross we're bearing, that we can all open up and be more, actually, no, I take that back. I hope we can all, even yeah. now, yeah. be more loving. And this is the time to say to people, I love you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, now, at the everyday. But isn't that wonderful that your uncle came to that realization?
Yeah. It is, Daphne. And I knew he always cared for me, but he just would say it. And like my own father's, his brother has rarely has said that to me my whole life. He's 80 now. And every now and then he'll kind of grumble it out on the phone. Love you. Okay. Got to go. Bye. You know, but at least he's there. But I think losing his brother was part of that. But it's just the human dynamic of all of this. And that's why, and I don't, you know, not that you need thanks, but there is gratitude from people like me. My mother is a nurse. My brother-in-law is a nurse practitioner here in the United States. And you are doing, as they say, the Lord's work. That's what we say. It's just incredible that you did this. And under those circumstances too, where the nurses are basically being treated disrespectfully with pay and all that. It's just amazing. I don't believe in angels necessarily, but if there are earthbound angels, they got to be nurses as far as I'm concerned. So I wanted to... Oh, sure. You're welcome. Thank you. I mean, I hope everybody, if you want to say you love somebody, tell the nurse at the doctor's office, I love you. Don't even know you. They're going to look at you funny. Just say, doesn't matter. I love what you're doing. Thank you. So let's talk a little bit, if we could, though. One thing, it seems that we're treading around on some of the themes like of loneliness. There's inequity and illness, obviously. And you weave this compelling narrative on the importance of friendship. So, Daphne, in what ways do you believe fostering connections? I think you're already touching on this. How do you believe that fostering connections can help us navigate the complexities of life today?
Well, you know, your U.S. Surgeon General, I think hopefully I have that correct, last year put out a paper, which I read, on loneliness and social isolation. Yeah. And I would suggest that people have an opportunity. It's not like... It's in pretty understandable terms. And I just thought, wow, how amazing. Because if you look at it, we have so many ways to communicate.
Right.
Text, Instagram, Facebook. Hey, somebody pick up a phone. And yet loneliness is such a big problem in our society. And I wanted to show that even if we're feeling alone and isolated, that we can make connections even as one ages. You just have to take the first step. And you know, whether it's maybe volunteering, getting out, joining a group, you can learn something new. Maybe it's something you never thought you'd want to do. But it's really sad to me that this is the most amount of people ever on the face of the planet, and yet loneliness and social isolation are a big problem.
We're so interconnected yet so far apart.
We are.
I did a little blog post piece for a health clinic as part of my day job, and it was on the benefits of friendships to your health. And as I recall, like the mental health benefits were stress reduction from having friends and enhanced sense of belonging and purpose. Increased self-confidence and self-worth. And then there's also longevity studies. So yeah, this hand in glove with the I think it's Surgeon General Murthy. I don't quote me on his last name, but yeah, I read that as well with great interest, Daphne. I thought it was wonderful. In fact, I'm going to make a note to put a link in the show notes for that because you all should read it.
Yeah.
We should all read this. So did you, as a nurse though, when things got tough, and it's a tough job, did you find though that your camaraderie with other nurses gave you the benefits of friendship that helped you get through some of the tough times?
Yeah. Sometimes you don't always realize it because you're in the heat of the moment. It is a stressful job.
Right.
And unless you're in it, you don't get it. But even with this book, when I had a launch last year, I was blown away by some nurses that came to the launch. They heard from somebody who heard from somebody. And some of these nurses I hadn't seen in years.
Oh.
And then they had a book club and they invited me to that. It just really hit home again. What a wonderful group of people I have been involved with. Now, have I always gotten along with people? No. Have they always gotten along with me? No. But I appreciate them as people, as human beings, and as friends. So the camaraderie, especially when you're in the thick of things and you have to rely on someone, and I could always rely on my fellow nurse.
And I've heard that from my mother and my, you know, she worked several jobs, including oncology at the Veterans Hospital for a while. And my brother-in-law, who has his own clinic, he's basically the doctor to a semi-rural area. And just the stories he tells me, you know, it's just amazing. And I've said to him often, how do you do this? He goes, I love it. He says, I help people. And he says, I tell them hard truths a lot of the time, but I still love it. And it was great. So let's get back to the book itself. And by the way, I saw the video on your website of your launch event, and there's all these people. And I assume some of those are the nurses, right?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And you are just beaming in this video on your website, and your husband, who, tell me about John. Is your husband like your biggest fan? He sure seems like it.
He is. I tell you, I don't know how I got so blessed to have such a partner. And he's always been supportive. I mean, I have done many things and started and stopped, put it that way. But he's just been my number one fan and very supportive. I hope everybody out there that's listening has someone in their life that is that supportive and that loving. Very blessed to have him. And you know, there's sometimes you feel like, oh, I can't do this, or and always cheerleading.
Do you find that do you feel like you have more pressure on you now that you've got one book under your belt? Do you feel pressure to do another one, or is it more like, oh, got the hard part over, now I can just kind of, I am a writer, you know, not that you needed anybody's permission to be a writer, you're a writer, but you know what I'm saying. So do you feel more pressure now with maybe a second book looming, or less?
Well, I'm trying to write another book. Somehow life is getting in the way here, but sure. I've started something and sort of ruminating in my head as well. I'm finding the pressure that, because I am a nurse and, you know, I've never really had to market myself. That is what I'm finding. I was told 50% is writing the book and the other 50% is marketing your book. And ugh. I am not a marketer.
It's really no fun after a while, you know, and I even got tired of doing, and this sounds terrible, I don't take this the wrong way, listeners, but I even got tired of just like going to book fairs and doing signings and going, I mean, half the time hardly anybody showed up for a signing. I did one signing where nobody showed up. It was so, I'll never forget this, the bookstore owner, she came, brought me a brownie and said, listen, it happens to everybody. Don't worry about it. So I ate my brownie and went home. But then you do a book fair and you sell out of every book you brought. And then you listen to people go, oh my gosh, I've heard of you. I read your book. It was in the library. Oh, well, all those things add up. But I think the thing that really, for me, that does it is just, I just challenge myself to create a story well told. I write books that'll entertain me first. I know my taste well, and I've found a small tribe of people who like my quirky, silly mysteries, and we go. It sounds to me like you have found, or you're starting on a tribe though, with your, even though you don't like marketing, because I have to say, I love this. I read this review. I love how Daphne has created such relatable characters. They just draw me in with their stories. And I really enjoy the short chapters going back and forth with the three characters. I like that style of writing. Also, how relevant their problems are in our current world. I'm just at the beginning of their journey and can't wait to see how they all connect and support each other. That was from a verified customer. How does that make you feel? Do you read those, first of all? And if so, how do you feel about it?
Well, I do read them. And it's nice, not all of them are friends. So they're people I know. So it's not like, oh, just my friends are like, ooh, I got to say something good. It really, I've actually been unbelievably touched, you know, because you put something out there.
Oh, yeah.
And especially as a first time. And I've got to realize a lot of these things, I'm so blessed at this age that I get some firsts. That's the other thing about doing something totally different, my friends out there in the universe. You get to reinvent. You get to do something new. Whatever it is you want to do, you get to see yourself in another way. This is amazing. Life goes on. Life is a journey, but why not throw in some spice? So it's been really wonderful to find out that I have touched some people, and it's always blows me away what character has meant the most to people, or what issue. Yeah, it's like, wow, I didn't really. Okay, thank you.
I get this question a lot, so you feel free to pass. Okay.
Okay.
How much of you is in these characters?
Well, there's actually the voice. People go, oh my gosh, Daph, I know that was you, but not everybody that's reading it knows me, so they don't know that's me. But yeah, there are things in there that I've drawn on, especially, you know, as a nurse, Fiona. Yeah. And I am a person of color as well. I'm biracial, so I threw in use some of my experiences with my character Adelina, and there's a bit of me in there. And but what's exciting too about writing is you start to get into the character and see other ways of being as well.
Yeah, you know, there is. I found in my series, like 8 or 9, whatever it is, books in it, and I found that about 3/4 through that there was some self-discovery going on there. But then I also realized I was really sick of myself. So
oh, you can't be sick of you, Alex.
Oh, no, yes. Yes, you can. You can be very sick of me. Ask my wife. It was just that kind of thing. But that's kind of how I knew my series probably was over too, you know, is that I think I was starting to repeat myself a little bit. That's a danger. But so I'm leading up to a question here. I got to make fun of myself at every episode. So I've already done that. I'll tick that box. But is this a story that could continue these characters, or is it they're done and you're moving on to something completely different?
Well, Bryce, I can't, because Bryce has passed away.
Yeah.
But I have moved on to something different. I'm finding with the writing that I'm getting to explore characters and put myself into situations that I've seen, but what's it like to actually be in that situation? Right. So I'd like to also do this as a learning experience for myself as well on the characters. The next one I've started, she murders her husband. So I'm like, oh, what's it like to murder your husband? Not that I want to murder my husband, but just what would that be like? So I'm hoping that I continue on with this. I'm a little stymied right now, but yeah, just it's boring.
Well, you know, it's okay to be stymied. That's and you know, you've already figured this out. Your subconscious is always chewing this over anyway, and it will come to you. Everybody always asks me, Alex, what did you do? I don't believe in being blocked. Technically, I understand being a little stymied. I get that, but I always just say, they say, Alex, have you gotten past little roadblocks on the way for a story? I say, well, there's first one thing you've really got to do, and they're like, what? And I say, get your butt in the seat, which is in front of your typewriter or your pad. you're going to get, it's okay to ruminate and think and do for, you know, but eventually what you got, I always view it like this. If I'm a little blocked, think about a dam that's built into your subconscious. The only way that dam is going to burst if there's more pressure on it. And to me, I apply pressure by actually sitting down, clackety clack, clackety clack, clackety clack, typing. And even some, even though half the time, to paraphrase Stephen King, I am shoveling poop from a seated position, there's usually something I can use there that will break the dam. How about you?
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for that. It is. You've got to sit down and do it. It's not going to write itself. Put it that way. And 100%. Yeah, it's like I got to sit there and start. And it's funny, you know, sometimes you can look at, oh, there's dust over there, or, oh, I got to make dinner, or, oh, you know, I got to call that friend, which is all the things I do. And, but then you start writing and you're like, oh, wow, why didn't I should have started this earlier. Never mind the dust. So yeah, it's sitting down and doing it, or standing up and doing it, whatever it is you're doing. But yeah.
Exactly. And you know, I what I love though is when I'm like, okay, I've allotted 45 minutes to an hour today, and then I look up and it's 3 hours gone by and I've got pages. That's the best feeling. Happens to me less and less because of my life circumstances have changed quite a bit since I first started. But anyway, Daphne, you have a fantastic website. Tell everybody where that is and how to find it. There'll be links in the show notes, but tell everybody where it is.
It's Daphne Leone. Right. So DAPHNELEONIE, right? WRIGHT.com. And
go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, actually, I use that. That is my name. But when I Googled, you know, because you're trying to find something unique. And when I Googled my name, the only person that came up was my aunt's obituary in Jamaica. So I was like, okay. Unique.
It is very unique. And you have a newsletter. I see you can subscribe to a newsletter there. I don't know how often you have much output there. Do you? I don't know.
No, thank you. I probably should do a little more. I do a blog on it. Yeah, on my website.
You know what I do? Instead of doing a whole new newsletter, I just make sure that my blog is linked to a list. So basically, my readers get at least one email a month because they just get the monthly rundown of what I've been doing, which is kind of an omnibus. And that's where I go from there. Because I do a podcast when I can just tell everybody random stuff. So I just do that. But I think that that's a great way to do it. You're also on Instagram, and my mouse, by the way, is not communicating. Ah, there. Thank you, mouse. Did you go to sleep? Come on. We're not that boring, mouse. There's a link to a great interview on the CBC, with you, and there's a shop where you can buy all the stuff, and they'll, again, listeners, as you well know, there'll be links in the show note. If you for some reason can't make those links work, go to mgopod.com and look for Daphne Wright's smiling face. It'll be there, and there'll be the book cover and links and all the stuff. And I encourage you to order this book. Daphne, do you have a preference? Do you want them to go to Amazon, or do they can order it directly through you? How do you like to do it?
Well, they can order directly from me on that my website, DaphneLeoneWright.com, but Amazon's as well. And especially if you're in the U.S., it would be cheaper for you. So.
Yeah. One of my closest friends is in Regina, and he's just like, I don't really want you to buy from Amazon, but I get it. It's a killer to ship it and all that. So that's just, you know, that's the way it goes. Or you know what I may do? When I do come to see you in Vancouver, we'll have a cup of coffee. I'll go to maybe there'll be a bookstore, or I can just buy it directly from you. That's what I'll do. Okay. Daphne Leone Wright, it's been a genuine pleasure. Congrats on your debut. It's
Thank you, man.
I wish I had half the good reviews from my first book, and I'm not joking. Yours are great. And I look forward to what you do next. And I hope if you had fun today, when you have a new project, come back and see us here on Mysterious Goings On.
Thank you, Alex. And I also want to say thank you for sharing this story about your uncle, because I know that must be hard. I felt like crying, I got to say. Oh,
well, thank you. Yeah. Wherever Sam is in the universe, I always appreciate his love, but I very appreciate someone like you who understands what he went through and the feelings involved there too. Listeners, yet another reason I do this show. I meet such wonderful people. Daphne, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks for joining us on Mysterious Goings On. Be sure to follow Mysterious Goings On wherever you get your podcast and never miss an episode. Don't forget, you can get the links to books and other things mentioned on the show at mgopod.com. Until next time. Keep reading.